This summer, I'm going to avoid spreading COVID-19. It's easy. I'll wear a mask in crowded places. If I have symptoms, I'll self-isolate and do a rapid test. If I test positive, I'll stay home for at least 5 days. And for the next 5 days, I won't visit anyone who's at risk. I'll avoid social events like festivals and gatherings. And I'll limit my activities to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is still out there, so we have to be careful. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
On Saturday, in my direction, the United States successfully concluded an airstrike in Kabul, Afghanistan, that killed the emir of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri.
The United States is claiming a CIA drone has killed the leader of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, at a safe house in Kabul, in an area where many Taliban leaders live. We'll get the latest and look at his legacy and the U.S. war on terror. Then we go to the fight for reproductive rights in Kansas.
Kansas, which is a state that's been at the center of anti-abortion attacks for decades, has now become a key destination state for patients in Oklahoma and Texas and elsewhere who can no longer get abortions in their home states. Today, Kansans are voting on whether to allow the state legislature here to ban abortion too. This is the first state to vote on abortion since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade.
We'll go to Wichita. Then, as New York, California, and Illinois declare health emergencies over the outbreak of monkeypox, we'll speak to Stephen Thrasher, author of the new book out today, The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States has announced it's killed al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in a drone strike in downtown Kabul in Afghanistan. The U.S. reportedly fired 2 Hellfire missiles at al-Zawahiri as he was standing on the balcony of his safe house located in a wealthy neighborhood where many leaders of the Taliban live. The United States has long accused Zawahiri of being a key 9/11 plotter, along with Osama bin Laden, who was killed in a U.S. raid in Pakistan in 2011. President Biden made the announcement of the assassination Monday night.
The United States continues to demonstrate our resolve and our capacity to defend the American people against those who seek to do us harm. You know, we make it clear again tonight that no matter how long it takes, no matter where you hide, if you are a threat to our people, the United States will find you and take you out.
The Taliban criticized the U.S. attack, saying the drone strike was a violation of international principles. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken accused the Taliban of violating the Doha Agreement by hosting and sheltering the leader of al-Qaeda. After headlines, we'll get the latest from Afghan journalist Bilal Sarwari. In Kentucky, the death toll from some of the worst flooding in the state's history has risen to 37, with more rain and searing temperatures forecast throughout the week. Hundreds are still missing in Kentucky. In California, 2 people were found dead in a charred vehicle Monday after the McKinney Fire exploded in size to become the largest U.S. wildfire of the year at over 55,000 acres. This follows record heat in the Pacific Northwest, and as forecasters predict, more than 40 million U.S. residents face triple-digit temperatures over the next week. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin's office said Monday the conservative Democrat has secured a promise from party leaders and the White House to complete a highly contested gas pipeline. In 2020, construction of the Mountain Valley Pipeline was halted by a federal court after activists argued its construction violates environmental laws and could pose catastrophic threats to nearly 1,000 streams and wetlands. The deal to complete the pipeline came as Senator Manchin ended months of opposition to President Biden's legislative agenda and agreed to support a scaled-down bill to combat the climate crisis. In Washington, D.C., indigenous-led protesters erected large tripods Monday in a nonviolent symbolic blockade of the Interior Department. The protesters are demanding Biden take immediate executive action on the climate. They're rejecting mandated oil and gas lease sales on public lands and waters as part of any new climate legislation. This is activist Ashley Engel of the IKEA Collective.
People are dying. My people are dying right now. We are not your sacrifice zones. We will not be your sacrifice zones. We will not sacrifice our lands, our waters, or our children or future generations. And that includes your children, too. And we also want Biden to declare a climate emergency.
A federal judge has sentenced a far-right militia leader to 7 years in the prison over his role in the January 6, 2021 insurrection. It's the longest sentence yet for a Capitol rioter. Guy Reffitt, a recruiter for the Texas Three Percenters Militia, was convicted in March of 5 felony charges for leading a mob that charged and overran a Capitol police line. Reffitt was reported to the FBI by his teenage son, Jackson. Reffitt's daughter, Sarah, on Monday, told reporters after the sentencing, "Trump deserves life in prison if my father is in prison for this long," unquote. Meanwhile, a new study finds far-right dark money groups have poured unprecedented amounts of cash into Secretary of State races across the U.S. this election year, aimed at candidates who espouse Trump's big lie that the 2020 election was stolen. China's warning the United States of potentially disastrous consequences if House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visits Taiwan this week. The Chinese Foreign Ministry's warning came as Pelosi traveled to Singapore and Malaysia as part of a tour in Asia that includes plans to become the highest-ranking U.S. official to visit Taiwan in a quarter century.
If Speaker Pelosi visits Taiwan, it would grossly interfere in China's internal affairs, seriously undermine China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, wantonly trample on the One China principle, seriously threaten the peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait, and severely damage China-U.S. relations. We would like to warn the United States again that China is fully prepared for any eventuality. The Chinese People's Liberation Army will not sit back.
In response, Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby warned China against using Pelosi's visit as a pretext to increase military activity around the Taiwan Strait. The U.S. Navy currently has four warships positioned in waters east of Taiwan, including the nuclear aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan. Here in New York, the United Nations opened a review of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which seeks to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres opened the conference with a stark warning.
We have been extraordinarily lucky so far, but luck is not a strategy, nor is it a shield from geopolitical tensions boiling over into nuclear conflict. Today, humanity is just one misunderstanding, one miscalculation away from nuclear annihilation. We need the treaty of non-proliferation of nuclear weapons as much as ever.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken accused Russia of dangerous nuclear saber-rattling over its invasion of Ukraine and blamed Iran and North Korea for harming efforts at non-proliferation. His comments come as the U.S. and the world's eight other nuclear-armed nations continue to refuse to sign the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which was adopted by the U.N. last year after it was ratified by more than 50 countries. In Iraq, hundreds of supporters of the powerful Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr continue to occupy the Iraqi parliament, protesting efforts led by al-Sadr's pro-Iran rivals to form a new government. Al-Sadr supporters have declared an open-ended sit-in at parliament until their demands are answered. Meanwhile, thousands of al-Sadr opponents held a counter-protest Monday and were met by police firing water cannons. At least 125 people have been injured in the unrest. The formation of a new government has been stalled since parliamentary elections in October, where al-Sadr's Sadrist movement won the most seats. Back in the United States, voters head to the polls today for primary elections in Arizona, Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, and Washington State. In Arizona, several Republicans who've denied Joe Biden's 2020 presidential election victory are competing to become Secretary of State. the official who oversees elections. They include Trump-endorsed State Representative Mark Fincham, who sought to overturn Trump's 2020 loss, and state lawmaker Shauna Bullock, who sponsored a bill to allow lawmakers ignore election results and choose their own presidential electors. In Washington state, Congress members Jaime Herrera-Butler and Dan Newhouse face Republican primary challengers. They were two of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach former President Trump over the January 6th insurrection. In Missouri, former President Trump on Monday delivered his endorsement in a crowded race of 19 Republicans seeking to replace retiring Republican Senator Roy Blunt. On the eve of the primary, Trump wrote, quote, "Eric has my complete and total endorsement." There are two people named Eric among the 19 candidates vying for Missouri's open Senate seat, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt and Eric Greitens, the former governor. Greitens attempting a political comeback after a report commissioned by Missouri's legislature in 2018 found he sexually assaulted and physically abused a woman before blackmailing her to cover up his crime. Meanwhile, in Kansas, voters are deciding today on a ballot measure that, if approved, would repeal the state's constitutional protection for abortion and pave the way for conservative lawmakers to enact a near-total ban on the procedure. In Kentucky, a state court of appeals has reinstated an abortion trigger law and a so-called heartbeat statute that bans the procedure after 6 weeks of pregnancy. This comes after about a month after a lower state court had halted the enforcement of the measures. We'll have more on the Kansas abortion ballot measure and reproductive rights in the country later in the broadcast. And New York City's declared monkeypox a public health emergency after officials described New York as the epicenter of the outbreak, with tens of thousands of people vulnerable to exposure. California and Illinois also declared states of emergency Monday over the rapid spread of monkeypox. This week, the first monkeypox deaths outside Africa were reported in Spain, Brazil, and India. Meanwhile, African nations still have not received a single dose of vaccine against monkeypox, even as the United States and European Union have secured hundreds of thousands of doses. This is Dr. Ahmed Agwel, acting director of the African Centers for Disease Control.
Let us get vaccines onto the continent. Let us get more resources for preparedness and response to come to the continent. And let us get attention focused on where we can be able to really stop monkeypox at source. And the endemic countries here in Africa is really the best place to be able to start.
We'll have more on the monkeypox outbreak later in the broadcast with journalist Stephen Thrasher, author of The Viral Underclass. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I am Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, the United States has announced it's killed the al-Qaeda leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri, in a drone strike in downtown Kabul in Afghanistan. A CIA drone reportedly fired two Hellfire missiles at Zawahiri as he was standing on a balcony in the safe house located in a wealthy neighborhood where many leaders of the Taliban live. The attack occurred on Sunday morning in Kabul. Al-Zawahiri's assassination comes nearly 21 years after al-Qaeda attacked the United States on September 11, 2001, and just under a year after the Taliban seized control of Afghanistan. The United States has long accused al-Zawahiri of being a key 9/11 plotter, along with Osama bin Laden, who was killed in a U.S. raid in Pakistan in 2011. President Biden announced the assassination of al-Zawahiri on Monday night.
My fellow Americans, on Saturday, at my direction, the United States successfully concluded an airstrike in Kabul, Afghanistan, that killed the emir of al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri. You know, Zawahiri was bin Laden's leader. He was with him all the whole time. He was his number two man, his deputy, at the time the terrorists attacked 9/11. He was deeply involved in the planning of 9/11. One of the most responsible for the attacks that murdered 2,977 people on American soil.
The Taliban criticized the U.S. attack, saying the drone strike was a violation of international principles. Secretary of State Tony Blinken criticized the Taliban for allowing al-Zarqawi to live in Kabul. In a statement, Blinken said, quote, by hosting and sheltering the leader of al-Qaeda in Kabul, the Taliban grossly violated the Doha Agreement and repeated assurances to the world that they would not allow Afghan territory to be used by terrorists to threaten the security of other countries. Al-Zarqawi was a key figure in the international jihadist movement since the 80s. He was trained as surgeon in Egypt, where he was born to a prominent family. In 1981, he was arrested as part of a broad plot to assassinate Egyptian President Anwar Sadat. Egyptian authorities tortured al-Zarqawi and others involved in the plot. The author Lawrence Wright said al-Zarqawi's time in prison and torture led to his further radicalization. After his release from prison, after 3 years, al-Zarqawi traveled to Afghanistan and Pakistan, where he met Osama bin Laden. The United States has accused al-Zarqawi of being involved in numerous attacks, including the bombing of the USS Cole in 2000 and the bombing of U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998. After 9/11, the United States put a $25 million bounty on his head. We begin today's show with Afghan journalist Bilal Sarwawi, who reported from Afghanistan for 20 years, fled the country after the Taliban takeover, and is now in Toronto. On Sunday, he published photos on Twitter of the house where the drone strike occurred, but at the time, the target of the attack was not known. Bilal Sarwawi, your response to now the news that al-Zarqawi has been assassinated by the United States.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will be sunny throughout the day and muggy, with a high of 27 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be mainly cloudy with a chance of showers and scattered thunderstorms in the late afternoon. There will be a high of 28 degrees Celsius. Friday will be mainly cloudy throughout the day with a high of 26 degrees Celsius. Saturday will bring peaks of sun in the morning with a low chance of a shower in the afternoon. There will be a high of 29 degrees Celsius. Sunday will be partly sunny with a risk of thunderstorms in the afternoon and a high of 29 degrees Celsius. Monday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 26 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday, there will be a chance of a shower in the morning, then partially sunny in the afternoon and a high of 26 degrees Celsius.
Overconfident, and I don't always see the consequence. My ego gets all, think I know it all, but you predict the fall just like you do every time. And you pull me from my vices that give me bad advice, and I know that, yes I know that. That you deserve much better, I keep trying to get there but I stumble. Yeah, I stumble. And you say, sometimes you're just a stranger in disguise. I don't recognize, but baby, well I know I can't keep loving you with my eyes closed. I will. Sometimes I think that the only thing more stubborn than me is your loyalty. And you always know the right punch to throw to make a man of me. So look me in the eyes, get me down to size, make me realize that I take your love for granted and live on second chances. You know that, but you know that. That I'll be running like a bandit, won't leave you empty-handed, back to you every time. And you say, sometimes you're just a stranger in disguise. I don't recognize, but baby, well I know I can't keep loving you with my eyes closed. I wear your heart like
baby. Well, I know I can't keep loving you with my eyes closed. I wear your heart like an accessory, and I play with it so easily. Oh, I screw up, I get high, I get so out of line, but I stumble home to you every damn time.
Good morning, McGill University. This is Todor O telling you that CKUT has some of the coolest artists and tunes you can find anywhere in Canada. Present company certainly not excluded. You are listening to the New Spins Library on CKUT 90.3 FM. The songs you're about to hear will go towards your final grade, so I hope you're writing this down.
Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock to the 14-year-old rocking out in their room, the electric guitar has been one of the most recognizable sounds of the last century. But have you ever wondered how the hell they actually work? This week on In the Shower, we're snapping the strings.
In the shower with Tez and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Tez and Marcus.
Hello, lovely people, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that aims to answer the mysteries of the world in the time it takes you to shower.
Have you ever wondered the answer to questions like, do plants have feelings?
What makes food spicy?
Do periods actually synchronize?
Why is plastic so bad?
Or about 70 more.
If you have, then good news, you've come to the right place. We've answered all of those questions. You can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we're about to answer one more.
This week's question comes from the one and only Tom Wilkinson, who's asked us how the hell an electric guitar works. So step into the shower as we answer his question on another episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Here we are, 2019, the first episode of the new year.
Just when I get used to saying like 2018, it's 2019. Like just when I got used to saying 2017, it was 2018. And all of a sudden we're in 2019. And do you know what next year is, Marcus? It's bloody 2020.
Yeah, exactly. 2020. The time doesn't stop.
This is our third year podcasting.
Is it?
Yeah. We started in 2017.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Time flies when you're answering questions in the shower. Anyway. This week's question comes from Tom Wilkinson in Manchester, and it was awesome to answer, mainly because it was one of those questions that I thought I knew the answer to, but I actually didn't really. He asked very simply how an electric guitar works.
Do you know what? Is an electric guitar not just powered by the raw energy of rock flowing through your body?
Do you know what? It may seem like that sometimes, but there's actually far more to it than that. Have you ever played guitar, Taz?
I haven't really, actually. Both of my brothers do, but I have never. Have you?
Yeah, I've played guitar most of my life. I started playing guitar when I was about 10. Played guitar two-thirds of my life, which is crazy. I've always been obsessed with electric guitars. I used to, on the way home from school, every single day, stop into a little guitar shop that's still there and guitar for about an hour. They must have hated me in that shop. Like, I'd say they could set their watch every single day by me. It had a lock on the door. You had to knock to get in. By me, like, with my giant school bag as, like, a 13-year-old knocking on the door being like, hello, can I come and play guitar again and not buy anything?
I'd say they loved it.
I don't know, but do you know what? Like, researching this episode made me realise that, like, from that age up until now, I've kind of taken electric guitars for granted. Because, you know, it's just, like, lead goes in, sound comes out, something, 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 magnets. But actually, there's some really cool history and some really interesting electronics there.
Yeah, like if you paid me right now 50 quid to explain how an electric guitar works, I genuinely wouldn't have a clue. Going out on a whim, I'm guessing it's something to do with maybe vibrations or something. But let's start at the beginning. Do you have any idea kind of who made the first electric guitar? When was it made? What do we know?
So I always thought that it was Leo Fender. So
Fender guitars.
Yeah. I thought that he created the first electric guitar, and I was actually totally wrong, and it predates him by quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm going to give kind of a historical synopsis of this, and then we'll kick into how it actually works. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely, go for it.
So in the 1920s, acoustic guitars were common across a lot of genres, from jazz to swing bands to everything like that, but generally they were an accompanying instrument due to their lack of volume. And like there was modified guitars that had more volumes, like kind of banjo guitars and dobros, which are guitars with a metallic body.
And by more volume, you mean actual sound volume.
Actual sound louder, volume, yeah. But what drove the creation of the electric guitar was the desire for more volume on the part of guitarists, who in true rock star form were sick of playing a supporting role and really wanted to be in the spotlight.
So this is kind of maybe in comparison to drums, which could get a louder volume naturally.
Exactly. Drums, you could amplify. And
even
the thing
singing,
is,
I suppose, could be amplified easier than...
Well, the guitars could have been amplified by holding a microphone right up to the guitar, but it was never an electric guitar.
Yeah, okay.
So all those early recordings you hear of, like, you know, swing jazz in the 1920s and stuff like that was always a guitar being an acoustic guitar being amplified through a microphone as opposed to being electrified as an instrument itself.
Okay, and then like guitarists kind of thought there has to be a better way to do this.
Yeah, because what that amplification did through a microphone meant that it didn't pick up the finer details.
Mm.
It just picked up the whole resonance as a sound.
Right, right.
So various types of modifications were made to hollow body guitars. Just to give it for non-guitarists, a hollow body guitar is any guitar that you can think of like an acoustic. It has a hole in it, or it has F holes on the side of it like a cello, and it produces resonance by vibrating the actual body of the guitar, and the hollow produces the amplification.
That's essentially why there's a hole in acoustic guitars.
Exactly. So the sound leaves that hole. The whole body of the guitar vibrates and the hollow actually amplifies that sound, right? Mm. So various modifications were made to that kind of guitar, such as attaching horns, like, you know, like kind of like a trumpet horn or an amplification horn.
Out of one of the holes.
Or like having it attached separately, yeah.
Okay.
Then like metallic resonators, and then very basic magnetic pickups or transducers, which turned the guitar into a lead standalone instrument, which led to the development of a ton of revolutionary new musical styles.
So new musical styles, what kind of genre could our lovely listeners listen to if they want to hear these early instruments?
So a lot of people think that like early electric guitar music was like, you know, rock and blues.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Like before that, in the 1930s, the first big genre that it kind of came to was Hawaiian music.
No way!
Yeah, which is actually really lovely to listen to. And if you look up on YouTube, search for like early 1930s Hawaiian music, you'll get a really good idea of what that sound. And the first electric guitar which was commercially produced in the 1930s was brought to the market by Rickenbacker, who are still making guitars and basses, really, really lovely guitars and basses. It was nicknamed the Frying Pan. And this guitar was called the Frying Pan because of its shape. It was a basic guitar neck and a small circular body with one magnetized pickup on it. And it was played flat across the lap. So you'd hold a slide in your left hand if you were right-handed.
I think I've actually seen it before. It's ringing a bell.
You kind of slide up and down, and it creates like that distinctive, like relaxed Hawaiian slidey sound.
Okay.
Yeah, so like that really, really distinctive, dreamy sound was the first electric guitar which was kind of brought into mainstream music, and it was produced and sold and recorded with.
Okay, cool. So moving on from the frying pan, what's kind of the next step in a guitarist's journey?
Inspired by the sound and the mechanics of the frying pan, a man named Orville Gibson, whose name is still plastered on the headstocks of some of the finest guitars available today, just Gibson guitars. I mean, that's a household name,
right? Yeah.
Even if you're not a guitarist. So he created what's seen as the first hollow body electronic guitar, which defined the sound of jazz and swing in the 1940s. It was called the Gibson ES-150. And he basically attached a magnetic pickup to a hollow body guitar. Now, this wasn't without its issues. The fact that the guitar was hollow led to issues with resonance and feedback, which meant that when it was plugged in, the gain had to be turned down quite substantially for the sound to be clear. But that, from
resonance, of course, is an echo within the body of
course,
the guitar.
But that, you know, from any kind of difficulty comes invention. And that led guitarist and luthier. A luthier is somebody who makes guitars. Led guitarist and luthier Les Paul to create the first ever solid body electric guitar in 1940. And the first guitar that he created, and this is actually so interesting, I didn't know this, isn't the iconic Les Paul, which, you know, like when you think, generally when people think of an electric guitar, they either think of a Fender Strat or a Gibson Les Paul. Like that's the two default, like almost kind of meme guitars. What he first did was he took a standard hollow body guitar and he actually cut the whole thing into three sections. So he cut the center part out of the guitar and it was left with the two kind of wings.
Okay.
And he made a guitar which was nicknamed the Log by putting a magnetic pickup into a solid piece of wood and then gluing the two sides of a hollow body guitar onto it. So they actually didn't have a function other than appearance.
Ah.
The guitar's pickup was put in a solid piece of wood, and that was the first ever solid body electric guitar. This killed the resonance, it killed the feedback, And the
kind and it of kinda looked like a guitar,
and
essentially.
It looked like
yeah.
a guitar. Exactly. The rest is history. All the subsequent music which defined the sound of the electric guitar can be pinpointed to that moment.
No way.
That Les Paul created.
So who are we talking?
Oh, like Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Santana, anybody really, like everyone to like modern guitarists like Tom Misch, anyone who that can actually just be pinpointed right back then to 1940, when Les Paul created that. And his name is still, like, Les Pauls are still some of the best guitars that you can get. He died in 2009. And when you look at the impact that he singularly had on music,
it's mad.
Absolutely fascinating.
So this was essentially all because guitarists wanted to be heard and didn't want to be in the back line anymore.
Exactly.
Kind of like to answer Tom's question, how do they actually work? Like, how did Les Paul invent this? How does it work? And... yeah, like, you know.
So earlier in the episode, I mentioned a thing that might have kind of gone in as guitar jargon called a pickup, right? If you look at any electric guitar, the pickups are a series of magnets on the body of the guitar which somehow miraculously take acoustic signal and turn them into electric signals, allowing them to be amplified.
So how does a magnet turn sound into an electronic frequency? That seems like witchcraft.
Yeah, it actually seems a bit like witchcraft, but when you break it down, it's really interesting. So below each string, the strings are always made of metal
yes.
in an electric guitar, and so they're magnetized. Below each string is a magnet around which a copper wire is wrapped many, 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 literally thousands of times, right? Which creates a magnetic transducer, which in turn creates a stable magnetic field around the strings.
So how do the magnets turn acoustic resonance into electronic signal?
So here's the interesting thing. It isn't actually the acoustic resonance of the string which gets amplified. For example, that's what happens in an acoustic guitar. But rather, in an electric guitar, it's the vibration of the string at a certain frequency which disrupts that magnetic field and then gets turned into an electric signal, and that's what gets amplified. So for example, the A string vibrates 440 times back and forth every single second, which translates to 440 hertz.
No way!
Yeah, so that sends it to the guitar's output through the lead to an amplifier.
That's incredible.
Isn't it?
So electric guitar has all really come down to magnets and good vibrations.
Exactly. Do,
do, do. Good vibration.
The sound gets converted to a very weak electrical signal at a certain frequency, which gets sent to an amplifier, which converts it back into sound. And bingo, you can rock out in your room pretending that you're melting faces with a stormer of a guitar solo on the main stage of Coachella. All thanks to the humble magnet.
Jesus, that is so interesting. I can safely say that I have learned a lot on that episode.
Do you know what?
Because it's something that you think is going to be like witchcraft, and it is essentially witchcraft, but it's witchcraft that kind of makes sense.
It is. And do you know what? Guaranteed every single person listening to this knows at least one person who plays guitar.
Absolutely.
So knowing that little thing, it's just like, it's real day knowledge, you know? It's applicable.
It's what we aim to do here and in the show with Tess and Marcus. So come here to me, Marcus. Do we have any guitar facts at the end of the episode?
I have a couple of facts, yeah. So we'll start big, right?
Yes.
The most expensive guitar ever sold was the Reach Out Asia Stratocaster.
Wow, that's a name.
Reach Out Asia. So this was a guitar which was made specifically to be auctioned as a benefit for the 2004 tsunami in Indonesia, right?
Right.
And it was played and then signed by pretty much every living guitar legend of its day, right? So Eric Clapton, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, Ronnie Wood, Brian May from Queen, Dave Glimmer from Pink Floyd, Jimmy Page from Zeppelin, Jeff Beck, Mark Knopfler, Pete Townsend, Tony Iommi, Angus Young, Malcolm Young, Sting, Richie Blackmore, members of Def Leppard, Jesus. Brian Adams, Liam Gallagher, Paul McCartney, and more.
Holy moly.
And that sold for $2.7 million in auction to an anonymous buyer from Qatar.
Holy crap. Do they call it their electric guitar?
Oh, Jesus. You see, come on. That was terrible. You were going to be
Okay, do you have another one?
I do, yeah. So the first guitar was actually created in ancient Egypt.
What?
Well, kind of, right?
Okay.
It was a guitar-like instrument created 3,500 years ago. It'd be a far cry from the guitars we play today, right? It belonged to a celebrity singer in Egypt at the time called Harmoze, and was made from polished cedar with a rawhide soundboard. It had three strings and even had a plucking plectrum device attached to the instrument via a cord. And it's actually still intact, And it's on display at the Archaeological Museum of Cairo.
Holy moly, 3,500 years ago. Mm-hmm. Madness. Okay, one more?
Well, last fact. Okay. In 2001, a British musician called Chris Black fell so madly in love with his red Fender Stratocaster, known by the nickname Brenda the Fender, that he married it after 35 years of dating.
Stop.
Yeah, the ceremony was held in a church in London and was officiated by a friend.
Stop.
The guitar was technically his second wife, as Chris was also married to a human woman at the time.
Human woman.
I like how they really had to specify.
Human woman.
And Chris, in a statement, said, never taking himself too seriously, it was only for a bit of a laugh to cheer people up.
Come on, Chris.
Brenda the Fender.
In the show with Tez and Marcus, 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 in the show with Tez and Marcus.
Well, there you have it. That is how an electric guitar works. I learned something, and I hope you did too.
There you go. So if your nephew or your daughter or your friend or your housemate got an electric guitar for Christmas and they are shredding up the house and it's wrecking your head, now you have a little bit more insight into why.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Show with Taz and Marcus. We have so many other episodes just like this one of varying lengths. None of them are longer than 20 minutes that we answer the mysteries of the world. We do them in a bite-sized chunk. You will be a more interesting dinner party guest if you listen to all the episodes. And they're good fun.
They're good fun. Thank you very, very much for listening. I love you. Taz loves you. We love you.
If you like In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, even if it's the first time you listened or it's the 50th time you have listened, please, please, please do recommend this podcast to a friend or to a family member or to the person sitting beside you on the bus. If you shared it on your social media, that would equally be really, really helpful. The way this podcast grows is through word of mouth. So if you enjoy it, please, please do tell your friends about it.
And if you want to get in touch with us, it couldn't be easier. If you have a question that you want us to answer on In the Shower, or you just want to say hello or send us a picture of your dog in 2019, that is also cool. If you want to get in touch with us on social media, just search for In the Shower with Taz and Marcus on Facebook, or look up In the Shower Pod on Instagram or Twitter.
If you want to send a question to our email, you can get us at intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com. I forgot where I was going there for a second.
Yeah, you really built up tension there. If you want to send a question to our... Where are you going to send it to?
But in all honesty, we are looking for more questions. So please, if you have any questions that keep you up at night, or if your granny had any questions at Christmas that made you go, I wonder, please do send it in and we'll debunk it for you.
Couple of thank yous to end the episode.
Thank you so much, Flo Robinson, for doing our cover art.
Thank you to Alan and Paddy and all the crew in the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
And finally, thanks so much to Dave Gertzman for our theme music.
Dave Gertzman, you're a legend.
Next week's episode, Marcus.
Next week's episode. You know what? We haven't done a bum episode in a while.
We haven't. And I think it's about time.
I think we need to start the year off in a good way. Just to give a bit of context, when we launched In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, we got inundated with questions about bums and poos and farts and everything. And we kind of put a little veto on them.
But we're back, baby!
We're back!
Next week's question, Marcus.
Next week's question is, why do dogs sniff each other's bums?
That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing.
In the show with Tez and Marcus, 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 in the show with Tez and Marcus.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
This is Brian Campbell, and you're listening to New Spin's Library on CKUT.
It's a light new morning, the sun is shining bright. Put away your sadness, dear, we're gonna have a bright good time. Even though I get the feeling you're hurting, trying to
prove it gets better for you. And me in these two-facing seats, travel on, sing your song. Be the face you were all along. There's no need to hide or think twice. But acting on impulse is never right for their eyes, for their sight. So take shelter with me tonight. Till you realize you are home within and you'll find freedom. They'll find their way back to what they are missing. So stay on the track with me. Did you know we can't head through dark tunnels with no sense of trouble all through the rubble? We'll be right back.
Well, that wraps it up for the New Spins Library. Check out the new YouTube blog where you will find interviews and playlists each week. Type the New Spins Library into the search bar of YouTube. Subscribe and join us for the best of the show available to you instantly. The Sleepy King and Terminal 5 are up next.
Spreading COVID-19. It's easy. I'll wear a mask in crowded places. If I have symptoms, I'll self-isolate and do a rapid test. If I test positive, I'll stay home for at least 5 days. And for the next 5 days, I won't visit anyone who's at risk. I'll avoid social events like festivals and gatherings. And I'll limit my activities to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is still out there, so we have to be careful. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.